The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Good evening and welcome to Desert Island Discs. Now, this is a story even I'm intrigued to listen to. Not really about the business, but the person behind, should I even call it a business? We all grew up knowing that if you wanted to know God differently, be welcomed into a church that was cool, quote unquote, for the youngsters. A church that had revolutionized what it means to worship, to enjoy, to understand God in this country. Back in the day, you used to hear KPC, Kampala Pentecostal Church. Today, it's known as Watoto. But what's the story behind that? After retirement recently, we got to sit down with Pastor Gary Skinner, because as I've realized, you actually don't retire out of God's calling. Pastor Gary Skinner and his wife, Marilyn Skinner, welcomed us into their home. We'll be having a three-part series where we get to actually know the story behind KPC, now known as Watoto, and the two individuals who, just with one calling from God, decided to pack their bags, come to Uganda, and have never looked back. The story of Pastor Gary Skinner starts right now. It's Desert Island Discs. I'm Flavia Tumusime. Welcome.
Pastor Gary Skinner. Is there a middle name?
Mark.
This must be your first time being interviewed or profiled of sorts, is it? Because I tried to look around and there wasn't much of an in-depth story about you that was put out.
No, I would say there's not been an in-depth story anywhere.
Intentional?
I've told lots of stories in different places on TV or whatever, but haven't done much radio.
I've interacted with your work, but not necessarily with you. So this should be interesting. I'm getting to really know you. Pick a time, wherever in your childhood, and take us there, and we'll start your story there.
I tried to hook a bouncer playing cricket. I mistimed the hook, and I was caught, and I was out. Very disappointed. I've never forgotten that.
Explain to us what, because when you say hook, I'm thinking a trap, like a bird trap.
That's when you try to hit the ball over your shoulder.
Right.
In a cricket match, which is not very Ugandan, but it was in South Africa where I grew up as a boy. And I loved cricket.
Were you any good at it at that point?
I was pretty good. I was on one of the town teams and loved it. And I did a lot of sports as a boy, and cricket was my favorite.
Right. And so talk to us about family. You grew up with, you know, in what kind of home, kind of parents, and how many siblings, that sort of thing.
My dad was Canadian. My mom was British.
Okay.
She came out after the war, Second World War, to South Africa. My dad was a missionary kid. His parents came to Africa in 1936. And I had one brother who was 19 months younger than me, a sister who was a year and a half younger than him. Mm-hmm. And then we had a fourth one that showed up a little bit later, as sometimes happens.
Yes. When the parents have sort of
a surprise.
Oh dear. And so that means, well, 19 months, and that means you were close.
We were all very close.
Close.
We had a great upbringing as a boy. I have good memories of my childhood.
Is that fun memories, that's play, or good memories, interaction?
Interaction. Oh, okay. Just fun. We spent time in Zambia. It was Northern Rhodesia at the time. Boarding school, which I didn't like at all, but sports I really enjoyed. Just what my dad was doing, planting churches in rural communities, and then went down to South Africa where he was a printer and did a lot of printing. And then I felt really privileged growing up in Africa. Africa is who I am. I'm not Canadian by any means.
I've heard you say that. I'm African to the core.
To the core. I feel African. I don't look African, but I certainly feel it.
We
went back to Canada a number of times.
Okay.
Never felt at home.
Okay.
When I was there, it smelt different, it felt different, everybody talked different.
Wasn't familiar.
It wasn't familiar. And I still feel the same way. And now that we've spent most of our lives in Uganda, by far the biggest portion of our lives have been spent in Uganda, I feel not just African, I feel Ugandan.
But did you actually understand what Dad did?
Oh yes.
You did?
Absolutely. He was a pastor, preacher, missionary, evangelist. I went with him as a boy. He took me along to the events, to the meetings. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I even participated. I was a trumpet player, guitar player, singer, and I would do that. And I would go with him and sing and play my trumpet. And
yeah.
Then he started asking me questions, you know, about my own faith as a teenager. And I remember sharing those feelings of my faith with rural African people, you know, and it connected with them. And I felt at that point in my life a real calling to give my life to that kind of thing.
So I don't know if I'm hearing a separation, because for us here, if you say missionary, we're thinking more of what it would be is growing up being told Bible verses, and this is how you should think of God. This is the kind of relationship you should build with God. Whereas what I hear, it sounds more like a service.
Oh, it was a way of life.
A way of
life. It was a way of life. We weren't Christians going to church.
Right.
We were Christians. We lived everything about our lives was living out the who we were as Christians. I think that has become a much more defined thing in my life now, where I think we live in a Christian country, but not much Christian activity or Christian culture.
Well, how we live says different, very different from what we say we believe.
Yeah, but for me, growing up, it was who I was, and certainly still is who I am, and I even see myself more as a citizen of heaven than I do a citizen of Africa or even a citizen of Uganda.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I think it's a concept that we're probably far way ahead of our story than we ever should be. But
we'll find our way we'll through
there.
All the bits.
We'll get there. It's who I am and who I was as a boy growing up. I felt from the very earliest part of my life destiny and calling, and I felt like, you know, God wasn't some abstract notion far away that I had to figure out. He was right there all the time. And I got to know him just like I got to know my mom and dad and my brothers and sisters. And that's never gone away.
That's close.
Yeah.
You say a lot of your childhood, you were growing in Africa. Just what are the different countries that you had to follow dad to?
Well, I was born in Zimbabwe, which was southern Rhodesia. Moved to South Africa as a young boy, where dad did that printing stuff. And then we were asked to go back to Zambia, northern Rhodesia at the time. We lived there during independence time, which was a bit dangerous. When Kenneth Kaunda became the first president, UNIP, I remember the party, and the whole feeling of Africa going through independence. And then we were asked to go back to South Africa for my dad to continue what he did. So it's those three countries. So I spent all my boyhood in southern Africa, but never much in East Africa. My dad came first to East Africa.
Right.
And then
straight to Uganda? Or
no, he went to Kenya.
Okay.
My grandparents went to Kenya in 1936. I didn't know much about East Africa, but then when God called us specifically to plant a church in Kampala, that was the beginning of our East African adventure.
Right.
And I still feel very much ties with Southern Africa, but we have lived for 40 plus years, which is the biggest part of our lives, in Uganda, and certainly feel very Ugandan, love Ugandan people, love Uganda, love the weather, love everything about Uganda, the pineapples,
the mangoes, they're
the best, you know, and the people are fabulous people. I think I identify with Ugandans. I love the way they're English. I love just the way they connect. And like most people everywhere, you get good and bad people depending on their attitude. Mm-hmm. Ugandans are the same. So bad Ugandans are pretty bad. But good Ugandans are
also
fabulous people. Very good people.
It sounds to me like bias might be a strong word. But because you'd witnessed what your dad was doing, sounds like even at that young age, as a young boy, you sort of knew where you were gravitating. It sort of made sense what you would become. Not do, but become.
Yeah.
In that early time when you're a young boy and you're witnessing service from your father, and then of course you taking part in it, what sort of tugged at you? Was it how you made people feel? Was it how it made you feel to serve?
There was a pull in two directions.
Okay.
One was my love for Africa, particularly African wildlife. Okay. And I lived on the edge of Kruger National Park, which is the one of the biggest national reserves. And I loved going to the game park, and I really wanted to be a game ranger.
Oh.
That was my dream in life.
Okay.
And I could identify with that because I loved it. I knew all the African names. Loxodonto africana was an African elephant. It was gestation period. It was almost 24 months. I knew everything about them.
Yeah.
And I would go in there. And but at the same time, I had this passion for Africa as a whole. Mm-hmm. And God said to me very clearly, I want you to become a pastor. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't want to do that. I want to be a game warden. he said, I don't want you to look after animals. I want you to look after people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very clearly thinking, oh, I don't like people nearly as much as I like
Africans.
Animals, yeah. And people, you've got to love them and be kind to them. That's tough. Animals, they give you a hard time. Just shoot them. You know, that's the way. I remember having a conversation.
You're like, this is an easy conversation with animals.
That was my conversation with God, and that's the way I've always interacted with God. In a very, it's almost as if we've had a conversation throughout my entire life. But it was a definite calling. I don't want you to look after animals. I want you to look after people. And it became very clear to me. And if you want to be happy, do what God wants you to do.
Uh-huh.
If you want to be unhappy, just do what you want.
And is that listening to him the first time round, or
no? It's never the first time.
Yeah, right. You go round and round,
and repeats
himself, and
yeah.
You're like, okay, fine.
And you do some dumb things and make some bad mistakes, and mm-hmm. you usually come back.
Yeah.
You know, you usually come back.
Right. I want to hear your first song choice now.
Let me give you the one that we used just this past weekend.
Okay.
And it was at the weekend when we were transitioning and passing over the responsibility to Julius and Vernita. And it was the song that I sang by Andre Crouch. And it's called There's Nobody Else Like You. Mm. And it's not a love song singing to my wife. It's about there's nobody else like Jesus.
The relationship is with somebody else. To God, Jesus.
So there's
yeah.
nobody like her, but there's nobody like Jesus.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
just to show the Father's love.
Show the Father's love. That's why I love you.
Cause there's nobody else.
Nobody else.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs and we have Pastor Gary Skinner. There's no such thing as retired in the calling, is there?
Not really. Yeah.
You stay in the calling until...
Yeah.
So you asked for Andre Crouch. There's nobody
else like you.
And you were telling us how, I mean, I want you to take care of people. Not take care of animals. So, of course, that dream died. You couldn't be a game warden then. What does that mean to follow the calling? I mean, do you draw a plan? In my mind, I'm thinking, is there a PowerPoint presentation on how you're going to go next and where you're going to go next? How do you even follow that?
Yeah, that was pretty easy. At that point, the obvious choice was to then study theology in a college to prepare for Christian ministry. That was the way we did it back then.
Oh.
It's a little different now,
yeah.
And the way we've done it now is a little different. There's some good things about that, and there's some good things about the way we do it now. We've got a lot of pastors who are not well trained at all and preach a lot of pretty funny stuff because they don't have theological grounding or roots. But for me, that was a natural response. So I felt to go back to Canada to go to Bible college where we studied theology, and then the rest would take care of itself.
So your father knew about this calling,
and he
obviously supported it.
Yeah, very much supported it. He wondered if I should do something else first, study something else first, but I said, no, if this is what God wants me to do, I'm just going to get
just
on
skip
with
to it.
I'm just going to get right on with it. So I went to Canada, and it was a very different world.
Mm-hmm.
Canada was cold and miserable winters. I hated every minute of it. I'd turn the windows down as much as I could, even in the middle of winter, because I wanted to feel outside, but it was too cold. And people were different, and food was different, and culture. And the other thing that I did very much was music. I was a singer, a guitar player, and I loved music. And so coming back to Canada, that was a big part for me of even preparation for ministry was not just theology, but what turned out to be worship. I mean, if you look at today who Wotato Church is, it's a great deal of it is about worship and style of worship and singing. And and also Wotato Church is about, you know, we call it the cantata, the Christmas special, or special events, or sending children's choirs around the world. It all became a part of who I was becoming who I am today and who we've been allowed to be over the years, which has shaped how we express our faith in very practical ways. So the natural thing was to go and study theology. I hated every form of formal education. I hated school. Oh, it was a drag. Homework. I hated I wasn't a great student, but I think that made me feel a bit of a failure academically because I hated academics. But I've realized now at the end of my life that I'm not stupid. I'm pretty smart. It was just a formal education. I got a library full of books, and God has shown me some amazing things, but it wasn't formal education that did it. It was life and the experiences of life. So that was the way it was for me. Go and study in this college.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, I understand when a musician goes to Juilliard. I understand when somebody wants to join the army, goes to Santa's. I mean, I sort of thinking, okay, you shoot a gun, you learn how to discipline people, you learn theology. Because it's a calling for you, like, it's a discussion with God, I want you to do this. It's like saying a musician already has a talent. You know, why are they trying to understand the theory end of it? So what are they teaching you? Is that how to understand the Bible? I mean, what kind of learning is involved in theology?
Right. You go through what you call systematic theology.
Right.
Everything from the study of God, which is the theology, the Bible, how it was formed, what the basis of the Bible is. You study about something called ecclesiology, which is the study of the church, and you go through church history and a bunch of things. You go through pneumatology, which is the study of the work of the Holy Spirit. Okay. And there's all kinds of these different subjects, mm-hmm. which take you a whole lot deeper and into who God is and how God works with people. Then there's the practical side of ministry as well. You even take the Bible into different parts, the Old Testament, New Testament. You take the New Testament, which is some of Jesus' teaching, historical, but also teaching, mm-hmm. Jesus' basic teachings. But then you go to what we call epistology, which is the study of the letters, which Paul wrote and others wrote this, and the theology becomes more clear. You can see there's a lot of stuff in there. And some people will go on and do a doctorate in those things. Mm-hmm. For us at Bible school, it was 3 years and a diploma. If you wanted to get a degree, then you went to another college where you got a fourth year and you did a bachelor in theology.
Right.
I never wanted to do that. I never got a degree, never had a degree, never had a university degree. I've only got a diploma in theology, which is not much. Mm-hmm. But it just proves that it's not so much the education that you get as it is the person that you are.
Okay.
And that's a major problem in Uganda, because everybody wants to go to university because you think if you get a degree, you're going to get a good job. The paper will say a whole lot, but we got a lot of stupid people with degrees in Uganda who are doing not a whole lot of good.
Right.
And then there's a ton of Ugandans who are street smart.
Yes.
Doing
and have accomplished a lot.
And have accomplished a whole lot. So I think for me it was the study, but it's much more than just study.
Yeah.
It's who you become.
Yes.
Who you are. Mm. What your passion is.
And how you build
onto
that.
And you can study all that theology, and it's pointless unless you have it backed up by character.
Yeah.
And there's a transformation of your person. Why do you study God? So you can know who He is. He's the creator. He's all powerful. He's whatever. No, because you want to become like God. What's God like? He's loving, kind. He's good. He's faithful. He's generous. So it's more about character development and who you become as an individual. And I think that that's something that's important for church.
Mm.
It's not just what you believe, but what you believe makes you live how.
Okay.
And that's what Africa and the world needs more than anything else. It's not just better churches with good sermons and nice music, but how do we help people become good people?
Yeah, I'm wondering, I mean, you had ties to the southern part of Africa. You had experienced it. Okay, fine. Canada, you didn't really love that much. But how does Uganda even come to mind for you to say, this is where I'm going to go?
We were sitting around a table with some friends in about 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject of Idi Amin came up and Uganda. I don't know how. I don't know how it came up in the conversation. And as clear as anything I've ever heard in my life, Jesus said to me, I want you to go to Uganda. I want you to plant an English-speaking church downtown in the capital city. And through that church, I will touch the city. I will touch the nation. That was over 40 years ago. As clear as anything I ever heard in my life. And so we were going back to Canada within a few months. And I said, let me take a trip to Uganda
and see.
And we went through Nairobi, where they had the Pentecostal World Conference. All these Pentecostal people from all over the world came. We were leading worship. And so I came across the border at Busia and went to Mbale. Mm. Couldn't get any further. It was too dangerous in those days.
Yeah.
But I saw Uganda for the first time. Went on a Sunday to Kumi. They said, we want to take you to a church there. We went to a church, and the church was in the hills. The little church was down in the valley, but the soldiers would come because he became a Muslim, and the church was persecuted, and Christians were being killed. And they would, instead of meeting in that little church down in the valley, they met in the hills. And there were these beautiful rocks, and there were these massive trees with birds flitting around in them. And that's where we had church, the first church service I ever came to in Uganda. And it was fabulous. They not only sang with such passion and enthusiasm as poor, fairly rural Ugandans, but they jumped when they were, and it was just part of their culture. I just loved it. And I got to speak to them. That was my first experience. And I knew there and then that my life work would be Uganda, mm-hmm. and serving in Uganda. Even though I've always felt that everything that was before Uganda mm-hmm. was only preparation for Uganda. This was what God had called me for, created me for, defined me for. And so it wasn't about, it wasn't even then about coming to Uganda to build a great church. It mm-hmm. was to come and serve Uganda in any way that I, and what God wanted was to build this church. So,
and so what was the progression? Because clearly you couldn't even go to Kampala at that point.
We went back, I went back to Nairobi, went to Canada, mm-hmm. Where we were supposed to spend a year and then go back to Zambia. And I said to the leaders in Canada, I really feel God has called me to go to Kampala and plant an English-speaking church. They said, well, let us think about that. And they came, and we got together a little bit later. They said, no, well, you can't go. We won't send you there. It's too dangerous right now. But I knew.
That's what you had to do.
That's what God called me to do. Mm-hmm. I began to fight with my own heart and say, do I listen to my leaders? Or do I say, God called me, my leaders are wrong, I'll do what I want. As I began to feel passionate about coming to Uganda, people began to feel responsive and began to actually give me resources to come to Uganda. And God said to me one day very clearly, I want you to give all the resources back and I want you to submit to your leaders, even if you think they're wrong. Hmm. And I said, okay. So I went back and I did that. And I was going on to a platform in Ottawa, Canada, capital city of Canada, on a Friday night to preach. And a phone call came through from the national office and they said, we've changed our mind.
Okay.
You're to go to Uganda.
Wow.
It was God. Mm. God checking my heart. Was I willing to live for a dream?
Yeah.
Or was I willing to live for God and the way that He wanted me to be submissive,
yes,
and so on, submission, and
wow.
when I obeyed the submission part,
he delivered yes.
the other part, and I learned from that point, you don't live for a dream, mm-hmm. you live for God.
Wow,
you live for the principle.
Because He will make a way anyway.
He will always make a way.
Wow,
sometimes it's much later.
Like I said, it's not the first time we listen to Him.
Sometimes God will give you a dream and then take it away to see whether you're living for the dream or living for Him. They said, back to Uganda. And so I came back to Uganda on my own. I wanted to get to Kampala by that time to see for myself.
Yeah.
And drove into Kampala. We didn't fly in. You couldn't fly in. There were no flights into Entebbe in those days. None.
Wow.
You had to drive in. And I remember driving into Kampala the first time and seeing the marabou storks on the telephone poles and the lines hanging down from the telephone poles and the potholes.
Like a deserted place.
It was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Kampala in those days was a disaster. Garbage everywhere. People were in shabby clothes, without shoes, many of them. The city was completely run down. And gunfire every night. That was Kampala. Most Ugandans don't even know that because most Ugandans are under the age of 15. Mm-hmm. They know nothing about that. That was the city that God called me. I remember coming in, I went up to Namarembe. I didn't stay at Namarembe Hill, but I went up to Namarembe to the guest house that was the Anglican guest house. And a storm was brewing and there was sort of smoke lying in the little hills.
Mm.
And this massive clouds formed and then there was a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this rainbow and God said, the city is a disaster, but at the root of the rainbow is a pot of gold.
Mm.
And you're going to find that pot of gold in this city. It was very real to me. So I went back to Canada and then prepared to bring our little family to Uganda, which was logically dumb. But it was what God called us to do.
To
and
do.
The rest, as they say,
is history.
Is history.
What's your second song choice?
A song by a man by the name of Phil Kagi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Rise Up, O Man of God.
rise up, O men of God. Have done with lesser things. Give heart and soul and mind and strength to serve the King of Kings. To serve the King of Kings. Rise up, O men of God, His kingdom tarries long. Bring in the day of brotherhood, in the night of wrong, in the night of wrong. Rise up, O men. For you doth pray, sent forth to serve the needs of men. Christ our strength is great. Christ our strength is great.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs, and we have Pastor Gary Skinner. And I love your story. Although, is there a story about, is it a little white guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah?
My mum and dad, I said I want a guitar. Uh-huh. And they thought, nah, this is another fad. I think I was about 16.
Yeah.
And they bought the cheapest little guitar they could find. And it was white with these little black things like smoke on them, and it was the cheapest thing, and I love that guitar.
Did it play for long? Did it play for long? Did it have some life in it?
It did some pretty good, and I loved the Bee Gees, and I learned some Bee Gees love songs, and the girls used to sit and listen to me sing those songs. When I think of that white guitar, I think of the girls listening to
the cheapest white guitar.
But it worked.
It worked. So we were at the part of the story where you said you would, yes, despite coming to Kampala and seeing how deserted and, as you called it, a disaster it was, it was still something you were very much convinced you were supposed to do. You were supposed to come back, no matter what it looked like. Yep. You were meant to. And so you had to go back home and bring your little family.
Yep.
What did the family look like at that point?
Our oldest son was about 8, and then our daughter was about 6, and our youngest was 4.
Ooh.
And it was a challenge in every way. Supplies, security, schooling, everything was a challenge.
At this point, you and your wife were in the same work or line of...
Marilyn's always been beside me. Her role in life, she would tell you, you can ask her later, but has been to help me accomplish what God has called me to accomplish.
Wow.
It's not her career and my career, never has been. It's always been us. And that's also defined very much who we are. She has huge talents. I'm a dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
She's a doer.
Oh.
So I dream.
Good
and
combination.
She gets on and does with. But mm-hmm. And she tells me all the time, would you stop dreaming? I'm tired.
of doing. I can't execute any more dreams of yours.
She was a keyboard player. Mm. She went to university level of piano. And she wondered, how do I ever use my keyboard talents in Uganda? Ugandans are great musicians.
Mm.
And she has been the backbone of a lot of what's happened in terms of Watoto's musical side.
Yeah.
And she's trained a lot of people. So it's, but that helps me to be a better pastor, because worship is critical to building a church, and you young people need good music.
Oh yeah, I was about to tell you that. I mean, we probably have to thank her, because every time somebody thinks of, even then, KPC or today Watoto, they worship.
Yeah. It's both of us, because I was a worship leader, guitar player, long hair.
Long hair?
I had
hair. Okay, just to confirm.
And that's where we met. We met on a rock band, Christian rock band in the U.S.
Right.
We'd been asked to join this rock band, which did street work, and she played the guitar, and I played the piano. And one day I looked at her, it was her turn to do something on the piano, and she winked at me, and that was the end of it.
Work. You know, I'll confirm this story with her. If it was you who winked, she will deny it. Mm-hmm. Okay. In her story, you winked.
No, in her story, she did not wink at me.
Yeah.
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 I probably did.
I saw the wink. It changed my life.
Okay. Wow. So, what was that? I mean, and it's a rare thing to get. I'm married, but it's rare to have a spouse as somebody whose life's purpose is to support you. That's rare. It's a gift.
It's Bible.
Yeah,
and God created woman to be a helper for the man. Doesn't make her less.
No,
it just makes her makes her very different. And I think a great part of the tragedy of life today is that you can have couples going in different directions in the same house.
And
sometimes the woman's career can become bigger and better, and it creates problems. There's lots of issues.
Yes.
And we become very complicated. But she will tell you, I'm sure, that her calling in life was to come alongside me and help me to be the best I could. And mine was to help her be the best she could.
So that conversation must have been easy. Oh, I went to Kampala despite the disaster. We're going.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
If she had, well, she'll tell you that there was struggle, because you can't come to that kind of situation where you can't get groceries and supplies. There's no supermarkets. You want meat, you got to go get hacked off of a carcass that's on the side of the road. That's not very Canadian.
Children have to be educated.
Children have to be educated, and there's lots. It was tough for her, and then gunfire and thieves coming in the middle of the night more times than we can remember. And being held up at gunpoint and having our car stolen from us. That was, you know, to ask a wife to come alongside you, she pretty well needs to have a call herself.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't come through, life can be hell.
Mm.
And so it was not just me, it was definitely her.
So the first, because I'm trying to figure out, by the time you came, how many years did it take for everything to sort of stabilize, where you could now say, you know,
It was at least 10 years, probably 10. More like 15 years.
Wow.
Because those first 10 years, what, Museveni marched into Kampala when? 1986.
Six.
You guys should know that. You're old Ugandans. That was, 1986 was 3 years after we came. Mm. And it still took 10 years of Museveni's first time as leading the country before things ever got settled down for him to do what he has done admirably, which is bring a sense of security back, because the security in those days was virtually non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and it took 10 years. So it was at least 15 years before there was any sense of
stability
and security. I mean, you drove out in your car every day and wondered if you would come back with the same car.
Wow.
We didn't.
You wondered and you found out. Okay. What, because I and probably a lot of Ugandans in a certain age group know what used to be KPC, where it, well, still is as Watoto, the main building. But for me, that just looks like, oh, you got a great place, great big hall.
It's a wonderful story.
But that's not where it started.
No. Well, we started in the Imperial Hotel.
Okay.
The Crystal Suite. It was called the Crystal Suite, and I tell people,
how many people could you fit in there?
I tell people it wasn't Imperial, Crystal, or Suite.
Okay, it was space.
it was a small hall that would seat about 100 people, 150. It was used as a disco on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and we rented it on Sunday.
Well.
And so we would come in on Sunday morning and clean up the beer bottles, the vomit out of the toilets, and there were no electrical plugs, just bare wires, and you were lucky if there was electricity. Okay. That was our first service, was on April the 22nd, 1984, Easter Sunday, and 75 people showed up. We had advertised on...
I was about to say, how did they know you were there?
We advertised after Jimmy Swaggart. He was on TV.
Okay.
He was in still people's good books in those days. And we had 75 people show up for the first service. And we just began to grow what we knew to be a classical Pentecostal church with the classical Pentecostal style of liturgy and worship and preaching. At that point, it was very clear that young people were in need of some kind of vitality and life in the church.
Yes.
Because the Anglican Church, which is a phenomenal church and has literally shaped the course of what Uganda has become, and the history of the Anglican Church here is an amazing history of commitment and loyalty, but they had become fairly dry and a bit boring for young people.
Unrelatable, you know, to
young people. And propagated the whole concept of the older generation dominating the younger generation, just do what you're told.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, no, sir, whatever you say, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way church was run. And then you come to this church where it's very different. And I began to realize that it was going to always be a young people's church. And God made it very plain that we were to attract young people in order to help them to become the next generation of Ugandan and African leaders. But the style of liturgy grew from classical Pentecostal to what we call neo or new Pentecostal, which is the style of worship and music and preaching and with lights and everything. And there was a process for that, but it was very clear that we were to attract young people.
That's very clear, but was it much accepted? Because you were coming to a country which, even today, where things are sort of understood, we're held back by certain ways that we perceive church.
It was not well received.
Yeah.
At first, the attitude was, it's just church attracting young people, it won't last, it doesn't matter. They can't be serious about anything.
Because you could dress how you wanted to dress and you could come in as you are.
In those days, even our relationship with the Anglican Church was not healthy, because the relationship between Pentecostals and the Anglican Church wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
And most of what was considered Pentecostal was wild, eccentric, loud, aggressive. If young people made a commitment of their lives to Christ, they were to become radical. Therefore, they got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and they prayed as loud as they could, and who cares what the rest of the family thinks? I'm spiritual and you're not.
Yeah.
And that was the attitude of the young people. There was a sense in which we were part of this rebellious movement called the Pentecostal movement.
Yeah.
It took years for that to change. And at first, the Anglican Church was strongly resistant of us. And even, I would think, maybe you thought of us as cultish.
Because also, you want to say that there's that notion that people at the time would probably have had, what's this Muzungu coming to do, and why are they, you know, inserting this sort of way of doing things?
Yeah.
Did you not feel that?
Not so much. I never ever felt that. That was one of the things about Uganda that, having grown up in Southern Africa, where you have a lot of strong racial
race, is not
it's not
much
an issue
of a conversation
in Uganda.
Yeah.
And I never there later on, after some Ugandans began to travel to Russia and different places, they came back with this attitude of, you know, cultural imperialism or whatever you want, colonialism, you know. I never felt that in Uganda.
That's a compliment to us.
It is. It really is. There was tribalism, but not much racism. I remember going to the Anglican Church. We wanted to show the Jesus movie, and we had no projector. So I went to the Anglican Church. They had a projector, and they said, no, we don't rent.
Surely you could have gone anywhere else.
The Anglican Church is a great church.
Yeah.
They believe the same as we believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that their way of doing it
is different.
Is very different and not attractive. That's changing today. And there's a lot of things happening in the Anglican community that is very good. And you have the Anglican community now mm-hmm. standing up to the rest of the Anglican community mm-hmm. worldwide on major theological issues, mm-hmm. such as the LGBTQ yeah. thing, which is happening right now. It took a while for the Anglican community to accept that we were not that wild brand mm-hmm. of Pentecost. In fact, Jesus very clearly said to me one day, I want you to be alive, but not wild, mm-hmm. conservative, but not dead.
Okay.
And we crafted our liturgy, the way we do worship, mm-hmm. to be alive, but not wild.
Mm.
Conservative, theologically, mm-hmm. and in terms of our understanding of mm-hmm. of what Christianity is about. And that really worked. It attracted young people. Young people would come to church, and I would find out that their parents had not given them blessing to come to church. Mm-hmm. They were actually there out of rebellion. And we began to say to the young people, you cannot come to this church if you're in rebellion to your parents.
Okay.
You go back to your parents and ask for permission. If they say no, you don't come.
Wow.
But when you go home, become the best you that you can be. Mm-hmm. Serve your parents. Can we go to church together? Because some of the parents weren't going to church, even though they were Anglicans or Catholics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents didn't want to go or whatever. And they kept asking permission. So finally they gave them permission. Mm-hmm. He said, if they said, be home by a certain time, be home. And as they learned to honor their parents, which is a biblical principle, even if they think their parents are wrong, the parents began to release them to come.
Mm.
And now, it was within 10 years, there were people that would stop me on the streets and say, Pastor Gary, nice to meet you. My children come to Kampala Pentecostal Church. I don't. I'm an Anglican through and through.
Right.
But thank you for looking after my kids.
Yes.
And I realized at that point that what we had come to do, which was to help young people find their place in church and the whole concept of what church is all about, become very real. And now today, 40 years later, of course, we've got lots of older people, and some of the older people are saying, why are we here? The music is too loud.
There's dancing.
Yeah, there's dancing. I said, be here, be grandparents.
Okay.
But our relationship with the Anglican Church is very, very healthy. And our relationship with some of the other Pentecostals is not that healthy.
Okay.
Because there's not much unity in the Pentecostal.
It's competition instead.
It's competition.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the biggest pastor? Who's got the biggest churches? How much money is got? Dumb stuff. Really dumb stuff. Because we can't change our nation without unity. We need to come around the things that are common and good. And I've never wanted to be that big pastor of that big church.
Mm.
And that's the attitude I think you'd find if you talk to the people of Uganda. It's not about who he is. He's never saying this, that, or the other thing. And I want that to be what the next generation mm-hmm. Of young Ugandans grow up to be. It's never about competition. So today, God has brought us to a place of success and growth mm-hmm. and maturity and impact and influence that is based upon not whether we're Pentecostal. It's no longer that.
Yeah.
You know, it's who we are as a church in terms of much more than even our liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
It's now become, well, you know, actually they care for orphans and they care for vulnerable women. And their small groups are doing good stuff in all the communities. Mm-hmm. And it's no longer whether we're Pentecostal or not.
I wanted to ask a question about, especially when you were talking about competition. It's not competition, you say, but people tend to look at the Pentecostal end of church as business. But before we get there, yes, there was a shift from KPC, as we knew it, to Watoto.
Hmm.
Who came
why
up with that? Yeah. I'm like, I wasn't against KPC. I was happy with that. What changed?
That's easy.
Yeah.
Kampala Pentecostal Church says something.
Mm.
You're Pentecostal, for one.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
You identify.
You're
already
identified with the Pentecostal community. And actually, that's not such a good thing. Because Pentecost was looked at as being a business run by these pastors who were in competition with each other.
Mm.
And so I was very happy when God led us away from being defined by Pentecostalism, mm-hmm. even though Pentecostal theology is what I still believe. But what happened was, God had told us to look after the orphans, and we started Watoto Child Care Ministries.
Yes.
And that was the name I felt, which is kind of dumb because it's children's ministry.
But, for children, yeah.
but for international purposes, Watoto sounds kind of African and exotic. And I shouldn't tell you this, but Toto was one of my favorite bands. And I liked Watoto.
You're allowed. Yeah.
And that's probably one of the songs that I picked here.
Good.
Anyway, because I loved Watoto, Toto rather.
Yeah.
But we then eventually sent out the choirs, which is another story altogether. Mm-hmm. And the choirs eventually became well known internationally, mm-hmm. and sang in some of the most amazing places. Mm-hmm. Literally some of the most desirable places in the world, parliaments and palaces.
I was about to say, probably not a good way to phrase it, but they were a brand on its own that actually brought people in.
Well, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Mm.
People then started to visit
because
they were coming to see the children and to support the children's work. And people would even come and say, what church are you going to?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that one where they have Watoto?
Yeah.
It became Watoto Church.
Right.
So I was happy to change it from Kampala Pentecostal Church to Watoto Church because it was something that was known, and I think has been a good thing for us to do.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
So the business thing, because if you turn and there's the money aspect, there's a growth aspect, someone tends to see it as a church. There's also processes and systems that actually run or govern, if I could say that. What aspect stays a business? What aspect stays service? How do you even pull that line?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
And maybe I can begin by just saying this. I don't read the newspaper and I don't listen to radio or watch TV.
Wow.
Sorry.
Okay.
I got tired of it.
Okay.
And the stuff that was going on. I read stuff about me in the newspapers that was simply not true.
Okay.
One of them was that I was the 18th wealthiest man in Uganda.
You're not?
And you see?
Were you not?
And I found out it was because Watoto, as a church, all the resources of Watoto was accredited
to you.
To me.
So that Pastor Gary Skin and Watoto were...
Right. Were the one. That's
same.
Why I was so wealthy. And we, the Watoto Children's Choir goes out and brings back literally millions of dollars a year, every year, into the economy. But that's all credited towards me. And none of that is true.
Or assumed to be for
assumed
you.
Assumed to be for me. And so if you look at many of the churches, Pentecostal churches, independent churches, the pastor is the final authority and say, and a lot of it might, even the properties might be in his name and all of the rest. Very clearly from the beginning, that has never been the case
right.
at Watoto. In fact, I was so repulsed by the whole concept of the church being a business and the pastor, this is your job to make money, that I did everything in my power to make sure that we couldn't do that. I never signed checks, ever.
You weren't the last man to oversee anything?
Never. There was a point in the early stages where I was one of the signatories.
Yeah.
But I got rid of that pretty soon because I wanted everybody to know there is accountability and there are people within the church who run the financial systems and every single shilling will be accounted for through a process, through books. We will have auditors and we've done all of those things. All of the titles of the church were in the name of Watoto Church or Kampala Pentecostal Church. Nothing was ever in my name. Maybe I shouldn't even say this, but somebody came to me and brought this beautiful black Mercedes Benz and said, come have a look. And I, wow, this beautiful car.
Yeah.
And they said, it's yours, here's the key.
Oh, great.
And I said, I can't drive that.
No.
I like a nice car, but people from around the world would see me driving that, and I'm supporting children and orphans, and I'm driving this
our
magnificent car. Wow, I know what he's spending our money and this money on. I said, I can't. The person came back the next day with the car that I now drive, which is a four-wheel drive Toyota Land Cruiser, and a nice car. And much more practical than a
Mercedes. But you said this is better.
And I said, I can drive this.
Oh, good.
And I'm driving it 13 years later because I don't need a brand new car every 2 years. I'm quite happy for that one. Mm. But he said, this is your car.
Mm.
This is not the church's car.
No.
This is your car. But I made sure that it was transferred into the name of Watata Church.
What?
I did because
Why?
I want because I don't want ever to be accused of being here to make money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't own properties in Uganda. I've never been involved in making business. I could have. Mm-hmm. I could have made a ton of money. I could be a wealthy man. People come and look at this house or whatever, and they think, wow, he must have money. I'm not a wealthy man.
You could have been the 18th richest man.
Could have been. But you know what? Riches and money will never solve your problems. You got to get down to the root of who you are.
Yeah.
And I have enough.
Mm-hmm.
And my income, I don't want to call it a salary, my support, all of it.
Because there would be that question of, okay, if you don't take, then how do you?
The church, the church leadership, the committee, the church that runs the church.
Yes.
And they recognize me as a leader, and I have major influence, and my voice was important. They decided how much I was paid.
Really?
Yeah. Never.
So you don't sit in the meetings and say, listen.
Never. If it
with
was
all the hard work and the hours I put in, a few millions
when
would
it
be
comes
nice.
To the decision on my remuneration or what they want to support me, I leave the room and they make the decision.
And when you come back, if you're not satisfied, do you just...
I've always been satisfied.
Oh, great.
I've never, ever sat down there because it's never been about...
Because it's not something money. You come back and say, listen, appraise me this year and see if you can increase...
I've never asked for a raise, never... Watata Church has never been a business. In fact, this I think this is an important part of who we have become, not just in Uganda, but also around the world. Even overseas, churches almost run like a business, even in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by a board, and the pastor's kind of like a CEO, and he hires and fires staff, all this sort of thing. From the start, we have never been that kind. The church is run by pastors, and those pastors are like brothers, and I'm like a father and mother to this church, as opposed to...
CEO,
and I don't hire and fire staff. I raise up sons with every single one of the people who are taking over, and are every pastor, every one of them, all the people in administration, everything grew up in Watata Church and are my sons spiritually. And so we have never been a business. We've always been a family.
Oh.
And so for us as a church, we one of the things we said recently was, church is not an event you go to. Church is a family you belong to. And if you go and ask, meet many people within Watata Church and say, what do you call, you know, Pastor Gary? They'll say, oh, we call him Papa or Dad. And what do you call Marilyn? Mama. That to me is what Christianity is really about, relational as opposed to institutional. I've never been called Apostle Gary. My ministry is an apostolic ministry. I am an apostle, but I've never ever said that to anyone ever. I've never demanded to be called apostle or prophet or bishop. Why? Because there's so much attached to those things in the minds of people about, hey, you better listen to who I am. Don't you know that I'm the apostle? And if you don't, God's on my side. Watch out. You know, even though all of that might be based in biblical principles that are true, it's just not what Ugandan young people need. So we've never had church boards with chairman of the board, secretary of the board, vice chairman. We get rid of all of that stuff. Who do they call me? Pastor. They called me the team leader. Why? Because I resisted the whole concept of apostle. Am I an apostle? Yes. But I would rather be called Gary.
Or team leader.
Or team leader.
Okay.
Because it says something about where Uganda has come and where Uganda needs to go.
KPC into Watoto has not been free of controversy, and I could share some gossip, but that after your third song choice.
Gossip? I haven't heard any of that.
Oh, I will tell you.
Okay. This is Bob Dylan. You gotta serve somebody.
Okay.
Bob Dylan for a little while
became
a fairly radical evangelical Christian. He's Jewish originally, and he's drifted back and forth, but this was an album that he wrote that was really strong in its Christian content, mm-hmm. and this song, You Gotta Serve Somebody, is something that Ugandans need to hear.
Okay.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict dancing on the stage. Money, drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
It may be a state trooper, it might be a young Turk, maybe the head of some bigger TV network. You may be rich or poor, you may be blind or lame, maybe living in another country under another name, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Maybe a construction worker working on a home. Might be living in a mansion. You might live in a dome. You may own guns. And you may even own tanks. You may be somebody's landlord. You may even own banks. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes,
somebody.
You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Preacher,
spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. And maybe somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Might like to wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk, might like to eat caviar, you might like to eat bread. Maybe sleeping on the floor, sleeping in a king-size bed, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes, indeed,
somebody.
You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Somebody.
You may call me Terry, or you may call me Timmy. You may call me Bobby, or you may call me Zimmy. You may call me RJ, you may call me Ray. You may call me anything, no matter what you say. You're still gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.